and Flipshot. We've come from the future, seeking the power of the good in the way of the magic.
Take them!
Hello and welcome to another Cake Wolf's Happy Hour, 31 Days of Halloween. We are covering the show Monsters, a horror anthology that ran from the late 80s to early 90s. I'm doing this with Cake Bitch.
Oh, hi.
I am Cake Wolf. Today. She's a little bit out of sorts. She is getting sick and it's a little bit late tonight, so she's not on top of her game. She hasn't been drinking tea all day like I have. Probably also haven't been running to the bathroom as much as I have, too.
No.
Well,
I was just thinking, like, when did I last poo?
Oh.
Like, literally just a second ago. My stomach feels weird, too.
Mm. Again, with the poop. This is the poop podcast. Do you think we're
Welcome
a horror podcast?
Welcome to our poop hour.
But we're really a podcast about poop. All right, so, yeah, for this 31 days, covering the show Monsters, 2 to 3 episodes a day, we're almost done with this. On Tuesday, we're going to be completely done. That's it. That's the 31st.
Yeah.
31 Days of Halloween, closing it out soon.
I mean,
we are in season 3 of this show, and we were on episodes 15 and 16 today. We're starting off with The Space Eaters.
So did
and
you
And this
like,
one aired January 6th of 1991.
Did you choose to do this so that my last month of 30 being 31 was just like a whirlwind, and I'll be 32 in no time, and I'm old?
Yes, I am that thoughtful that I put all of that together.
You're right. That couldn't be.
No, a lot of people do the 31 days challenge. So this is like a thing.
Oh, see, yeah. I usually don't commit
Not
to
everybody
longer than
podcasts
7 days.
Every day. Some people will like draw a picture every day or write an article every day or something.
Right. I was just tagged in that 7-day black and white challenge. And, mm-hmm. like, I was hoping someone would tag me in that because 7 days, I'm like, I can do anything for a week.
Yeah, I would. Sure. But we're doing it for 31 days, so
and
a little bit more than a week.
There.
All right. So let's move into this. Our director for The Space Eaters is Robert T. Meginson. And our writers are Frank Belknap Long and Robert T. Meginson.
What was the director's name?
Robert T. Meginson.
Meginson. That is a great
The writer
name.
And the director. Our actors here are Richard Clark, Matt Holswit, and Richard Hughes. So why don't you go ahead and kick into this bad boy?
Well,
got a couple of geriatrics sitting down at a chess table.
Yeah, I think they're professors or something like that, or doctors. I don't know which one's Howard and which one's Frederick. They're pretty interchangeable.
Uh-huh.
One likes to plan and the other one does not plan anything. And
right.
That's basically our introduction to them.
Yeah.
So they're playing chess. And the one who doesn't plan says, "You're scared of me," to the other one because he, I don't know, never wins or something because he's too worried about his next move. It's dumb.
Yeah, they're trying to play off of something. I'm not sure what
they use the word poppycock.
Mm-hmm.
Poppycock, that's okay. The word that they use. So I think they're trying to get some sort of, like, rich New England intellectual vibe, but it comes across more like FDR American Badass.
Okay.
But badly. Like, even right. worse than that movie.
And for those who are unfamiliar with FDR American Badass, it's basically giving you Franklin Delano Roosevelt in a wheelchair that is dolled out with heavy powered machinery. We've got like Uzis and like fucking bazooka cannons on his
Uzis
wheelchair
and machine guns.
Yeah, sort of.
Like.
Yeah, basically. I think so. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
He's got a lot of guns on this fucking wheelchair, is what I'm trying to say. And he fights werewolves with it. So there you go. It's ridiculous.
He contracts polio from werewolves.
Yes.
Yeah, that's established in the beginning, so I'm not spoiling anything there. Anyways, so they're playing chess, and there's a storm happening outside, and suddenly, I guess one of their buddies, Henry Wells, shows up. And Henry Wells is screaming. He's saying, "My brain! My brain! It's gone! It feels like acid! It's burning! Help! My brain!" And they examine him and find out that there is a hole in his head after he passes out or dies. I'm not sure which. And they're examining this hole, and they realize that there's nothing inside his head anymore. They do an X-ray, and this, like, brings the guy back to, like, reanimates him, because he doesn't have a brain, so he can't be alive.
Yeah.
And he starts screaming again, and, yeah, there's no bullet, there's no brain, he comes back alive, and, the non-planner professor quotes Macbeth something about now the dead rise again. I don't know.
Well, he's quoting stuff throughout the entire episode. I'm not sure.
They're trying to make him seem smart.
Yeah.
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 He says something about he remembers a soldier running towards him after dying, and he had nothing. There was no way this guy could run towards him. He just collapsed then at the end. But, yeah, he was stricken similarly. so, when Henry Wells comes back to life, they start interrogating him. And they're like, "Can you tell me what happened?" And he's like, "Big light. Ship. Everyone's gone. There's a bright ship in the sky. And then there was a tunnel of fire. And it can walk on water and trees? The eye!" Like, he's just rambling on.
It's Jesus. A bunch run.
Of nonsense.
Someone says that to me. The first thing I'm thinking is
there's
aliens.
There's a tunnel of fire.
The second thing I'm thinking is I'm getting the fuck out of here. And the third thing I'm thinking is while I'm in the car and already leaving, was he saying that Jesus is coming and, like, eating brains? Yes.
So he says, "I ran, it froze me, it touched my head, and then I ran here." And there's a light coming from inside his empty head. And the doctor uses a little, like, the thing the doctors used, well, one of the professors, I mean. But he uses one of those things, like, the doctor uses to see inside your ear.
Yeah.
And he's like, "There is something in there." And he gets the tweezers out, and he tries to pull it out, but instead he loses the tweezers inside. And then he realizes that his friend's gone, and he's actually talking to the creature. And the creature tells him that he's up high, he found the house, and then they hear something on the roof, and the skylight breaks, and they know that the call is coming from inside the house.
Right.
So they, for some reason, sorry. They, for some reason, go to investigate, and this, like, tentacle thing comes down the stairs and attaches to the one guy's head. And, it's, like, eating his brain or attempting to get in there to eat his brain. But his friend shines some light on it, and it goes away. Is that the cat?
Ignore the cat.
Okay.
I'm putting medicine on her.
Anyways, when it retreats, they realize that the storm stopped. And they also come to the conclusion that the brain isn't necessarily gone. That these life forms want to study our brain because they make the false statement that 90% of our brain goes unused. It's not true.
I thought it was true.
We use almost all of our brain all of the time.
Okay. It's and constantly what do you have to back this up? Because as far as I know from the movie, I believe it was called Lucy, starring...
Yeah, and that was when everything came out and people were talking about how much that's not even close to being true.
Oh, okay.
But it was an American Scientific article.
Well, that's why I didn't read it. Okay.
But yeah, Lucy is not true. This whole, like, idea that we only use 10% of our brains is insane. it makes up, in this American Scientific article, it says, like, your brain makes up 3% of your body mass, but it uses 20% of the energy. I mean, even just breathing takes brain activity, and, like, neurons are constantly exchanging information. Even when you're dreaming, when you're asleep and dreaming, your brain is constantly going.
Okay.
So this Lucy, is how we know they are not real intellectuals.
Lucy was a fun one, though. Scarlett Johansson basically gets her brain unlocked and then starts turning into, like...
I didn't see it.
A giant ooze monster, basically.
An ooze monster.
By the end of it.
That's what happens when you use all your brain, is you just turn into an oozy thing.
Well, she was, like, basically becoming one with everything and therefore turning into ooze at one point.
Oh, she didn't, like, turn into air? I feel like air would have been more realistic.
Nah.
All right, well, apparently slime is more realistic than air to be part of everything, even though it falls to the ground and soaks into things and doesn't get absorbed by the air so much. Anyhow, so they realize that these aliens they must be studying our brains. And next thing we know, there is an eyeball outside the window watching them. And it comes inside. Or no, I guess it's inside. It's inside. It attacks the guy again with his tentacle to pull out his brain. And the other professor remembers that it didn't like the x-ray on their friend. So he goes and he gets the isotope and he throws it into the eye, and you think that's the end, but no, the guy's like, yep, I'm gonna die, I guess, and I didn't anticipate that, of course, this eye wouldn't come alone, and so there's another eye outside the window staring in, and then you realize that the isotope professor also has a hole in his head, and now he is also brainless zombie, empty thing, and that's how it ends.
Sounds good to me, the ending part of it. It's not too hot of an episode. I didn't really find myself getting too heavily invested in this one. Right from the get-go, we've just got, again, excessive amounts of dialogue between two old men, and yeah, it doesn't really lead to much in the grand scheme of the episode itself. We've just established a bunch of history about two characters that doesn't matter. It goes nowhere.
Yeah, they're completely interchangeable. Like, there's really nothing about them that differentiates one from the other.
Nor does any of their banter work into the story at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
So it's just filler to, like, help cushion a 20-minute episode that probably could have been, like, 5 minutes long. Giant eyeball comes and you fight it. Whatever. Like, yeah. Why do you need all this other stuff?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, it just was kind of a weak story.
Yeah, I don't know.
The eye monster itself was pretty cool. They looked neat.
It looked like something you would pick up at your basic Walmart, like a giant blow-up eyeball. Sure, I mean, it's fine. No, it doesn't have to be that special for me.
I guess I should say it reminded me of, like, those old 50s movies.
Right.
Where, I mean, it doesn't look real at all, but it's like, ooh, creepy eyeball floating.
Well, it looked better than, I believe it was 1953, the Crawling Eye movie. That thing was paper mache, and though it was an eye, it was more lumpy because it was...
Paper mache. Yeah.
But I still liked that thing. That was a fun monster.
So yeah, it had that, like, campy 1950s horror sort of feel.
Yeah, basically. So I think this one could have been better if you have dude come in, as he did. Sure, that's fine. He's going nuts. They find out
his
brain is missing. And then right from there, like, you know, just kick it off with the monster battles with the eyeballs and the little, like, stems that suck your brains out.
Yeah.
I think that's all they really needed to convey. You know, they could have been sitting down at the chess table, just quietly playing when the dude runs in and just kind of go from there. You don't need all of this dialogue. It's unnecessary. I would have rather have filled up all of that space, not with dialogue, but with, like, chase scenes of the eyes coming after them, or, you know, yeah, just like hide-and-seek kind of stuff, or anything, anything that was more action-based for this. Sure. I mean, if you establish that they're strategic men playing this chess game, then you can, you know, make it fine, like, conveying that they can go up against this thing in a strategic manner because they are, like, tactician-minded.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little bit upsetting the way that they threw this at us, but what are you going to do? I'm going to give the episode itself a 1.5. Feel like it could have been done way better. The monster itself, I'm going to throw a 2 at that just because I have a soft spot for giant eyeball monsters. That's just me personally. It doesn't look that great. As Cake Bitch said, it's something from an old cheesy movie, basically. But yeah, giant eyeballs touch my heart, so there's not much I can do about it. You love what you love.
Yeah, I think I'd probably give the episode a 1.5. Yeah. Not because it's like, it's not the worst one we've seen by far.
Sure.
But it did not capture my attention.
Throw in a lesson on this monster. What would you say it is?
Oh, I forgot about the Pompeii corpse at the end.
Sure.
Yeah, after they burn the eye with the isotope, their friend turns into this, like, ashy corpse, which was kind of cool. But as for a lesson, like, I don't know. There's not really a lesson here. Like, it didn't help them to be strategic about stuff. And the guy without a plan got his brain sucked out. So there's nothing. There's just nothing there.
Yeah, the lesson is if you're going to hang out with an isotope, we've learned earlier in one of the previous episodes, you don't want to hold on to it, apparently, is what this episode's telling you, because it makes this guy, like, hurt like a motherfucker while he's holding it. In a previous episode, we had a dude just chuck it down his throat like he's popping a pill. He eats the fucking isotope, and he's fine for, like, I don't know, 8 hours? He's got glowing hands.
Yeah, you're talking about the cancer vampires?
Right. So he's got, like, glowing hands, but
yeah, he's, like, performing Reiki on cancer patients.
Yeah. But this one, apparently don't touch it, just eat it. There you go. Eat an isotope.
Yeah. Sure.
As for other media, I threw at you guys at the very beginning here a clip from The New Adventures of He-Man, which was a terrible, but I love it, cartoon series from the 90s. We're basically moving away from the old Hanna-Barbera, the old Filmation cartoons, we're moving into the 90s and taking He-Man into outer space and, like, drawing He-Man completely differently, getting completely different voice actors for everyone, making Skeletor a goofy-looking dude. Like,
yeah,
he's got
he is real goofy.
It's like they put googly 90s. Eyes on him.
Yeah.
Weird. And, yeah, Skeletor basically meets up with a bunch of space mutants, and one of them is named Optik. That's O-P-T-I-K-K, 2 K's in that name. He's essentially a giant robot with an eyeball on top of his head. And, yeah, he doesn't really say much because he's a fucking eyeball, but he fights alongside Skeletor, and that's something to throw at you. If you want to watch some really weird, very strange cartoons from the 90s and you like He-Man, check out The New Adventures of He-Man. It's like you're watching animated Bible, like they're taking scriptures from the Bible and making it into a He-Man episode. It's fucking weird. There's these old cartoons when I grew up that they would show in like Sunday school of, you know, Moses and fucking freeing the people and all this and that, Ben-Hur and David in the Lion's Den, and the animation for it is god awful. And this He-Man, New Adventures of He-Man from the 90s has that kind of animation.
Yeah, I mean, even He-Man kind of looks like he's supposed to be a biblical shepherd of some kind.
He does. Now, it's going to be deceptive when you first turn it on, because the intro sequence for it is very anime-like, and it's got a lot of explosions and high action, looks pretty fun, but the actual episodes themselves are something to be desired, I will say. But I still like them for some reason. I think I'm kind of brain dead in a sense.
I guess we could always name our first child Optic with two K's.
I think that when you're growing up with this kind of stuff, your imagination fills in a lot of the blanks, and nostalgia just carries you back to stuff that really wasn't there.
See, this is what I don't understand about your nostalgia thing. Like, I loved Are You Afraid of the Dark as a kid.
It's still good.
Not many of the episodes.
Well, we watched Ghastly Grinner recently, and that one was fantastic. Yeah, that one wasn't
bad, but, like, I've rewatched a few of them, and, like, it really was not good.
I don't know. I haven't seen all of them over again, but the ones that I have seen, I didn't have much to complain about them. Maybe we'll do that next year. Are You Afraid of the Dark?
How many episodes of that were there?
A lot. I don't know how many. I'll find out eventually. God. We're going to, and we're going to move away from this Space Eaters, and we're going to move on to the next episode, which is episode 16 of season 3. This one aired January 13th of 1991. It is titled The Waiting Room, and its director is Philip Alderton. Its writer is Neil Marshall Stevens. And the actors in it are John Saxon, Lisa Waltz, Christian Jules LeBlanc, and Dennis Gentile. This episode...
This one gave you nightmares.
Yes, I woke up around like 4:30 and laid in bed till 5 and couldn't go back to sleep because I had an awful nightmare from it. This one's effective, I would say. This one starts off with three people going into a hotel, and it's basically a father, his son, and his son's newlywed. He just married his wife, and they're here honeymooning. They bring the father along because I don't know why.
No, the father takes them there.
Oh, okay.
Which is like a really weird premise.
But still, like, why would you have the father come with you?
Because he took them there. He arranged the trip and I guess decided he was going to go along.
That's strange.
It is strange.
I don't see why he would want to come here. It doesn't make sense when the story unfolds. But basically, we have the father going to his room and the son and his new wife watching him go to his room, and he turns on the light before he goes through the door. The daughter says to the son, "Why does your dad always do that? You always do that too. I don't understand what this is all about." And the son says, "Well, it's just a superstitious thing. It's bad luck to enter a room that is dark." And this is not something I ever heard, and there's a reason for that. Apparently, well, I don't know, maybe it is a real superstitious thing.
I have no idea. I've never heard that.
But anyway, we have the kid have sex with his wife. We don't get to see it. There's a transition of time. He gets up in the middle of the night. He goes, turns on the light, leaves, goes to the bathroom, which is like outside of the room down the hall, which is weird. Nobody has bathrooms in their own rooms. Right. There's like a community bathroom.
Like maybe it's like a bed and breakfast.
Maybe.
That's kind of how those things are laid out.
Okay. But he does that, and then he comes back to the room. He opens the door. The wife had turned the light off because it was bothering her. So when he comes back in, he says, "Hey, honey, did you turn off the light?" And he goes, walks in. He shuts the door, and there's this woman that you don't see the face of, but she lights a candle, and she turns to him, and the guy's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't. And then as soon as she's fully turned to him, he starts screaming. And then we show his wife, who hears him screaming, like, in the ether somewhere, just, like, far away. And so she gets disturbed, and we transition again sometime. And then we have the father and the newlywed wife sitting down on the one bed in her room. And she's like, I can't believe they're just telling us they won't do anything until... 24-hour notice, and this is...
Well, until he's missing for 24 hours, they right. can't file a missing person.
And this
report.
Is, you know, this is awful, like, he wouldn't just leave. We just got married, we just had sex, it's fucking cold outside, it's supposed to be winter.
Snowing, it's blizzarding. Right. I mean, they can't figure out why the so father-in-law brought them up there in that weather.
She's all distraught and trying to think of, like, things that could have happened. And the whole time, the father is just sitting there quiet, and she's like, why are you so cool about this? Like, shouldn't you be upset? And he's like, of course I'm upset. And she says, you know something. Like, he's obviously tight-lipped about something. He doesn't want to talk about it. He's like, no, I'm just, we'll go to bed. I'm going to go to bed. We'll reconvene in the morning. And she says, no, you're avoiding something. What is it that you're hiding? And he says, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, so just go to bed. And she
like,
eventually
try me.
Yeah, she eventually gets him to spill the beans. And basically what's going on here is a very, very weird story. He says that when he was married to his wife, they like consummated the marriage, and he pushed his seed into his wife, and that was the seed of his child that is now missing. He had a similar experience where he left and went to the bathroom and then came back and walked into a room that was not lit up, and then there was a woman in there who lit a candle and asked him to stay with her for the night because she was lonely and cold and she needed someone to keep her warm and give her a child and stay with her forever.
And, well, you're condensing quite a right. bit there, but yeah, so, that's the gist of it.
Right. I mean, all of this is basically established within about 2 minutes of their meeting. But yeah.
Well, she didn't say about the child and staying forever until after he had already slept with her.
Right.
Right.
But, you know, this is like a 2 minute scenario where he's meeting her and banging her and stuff.
Yeah,
but
it could be a 2-pump.
He basically goes in there. He agrees to this because she is gorgeous and he sleeps with her. And then after he's done, of course he's going to leave because he's married. You know, he's got his responsibilities. So
of course he's going to leave because he's a man.
And she's like, okay, well, I'll let you go, but promise you'll be back. And he says, I promise. And she says, you really, really promise? With a cherry on top. Basically, he says, I give you my word. And until he says that, there is no doorknob. But once he does say that, a doorknob appears. Until he says that, we've got a kind of Hellraiser-ish scenario where there's light coming out of the walls and the walls have cracks in them. And one of these cracked walls ends up being a door. It's a very strange room that she's in with all of this very bizarre lighting coming from the walls and, like, kind of hitting... it's like playing a strange light show on all of this mist that's kind of foaming throughout the room. And I wouldn't want to be in this room. There's a bed, there's some creepy Hellraiser walls, and a candle. And, like, that's it. That's all you got.
And the lady. Yeah.
So that can only entertain you so much, especially when her vocabulary is basically, fuck me, give me baby, love me long time.
Never leave. Yeah. Never leave me.
Basically. So I would leave too. I probably wouldn't fuck her, even though she is super gorgeous, because if, you know, a woman is telling you that she wants... And I'm going to say, I recently covered a movie on the Resurrection Zombie 7 podcast with Ron Martin and Jessica Feeney. The movie was Lady Terminator. In that, we've got a woman who's constantly fucking men within, like, 30 seconds of meeting them, and then, of course, the men die. So if any woman, and this is something that was established on that show, if any woman wants to fuck you within 30 seconds of meeting you, and she is not a prostitute, and she is attractive, then there's something wrong here.
Is this the lesson?
There is something very wrong here.
So the lesson is, essentially, no one in their right mind is going to want to jump your bones immediately upon seeing you.
Correct. Unless, you know, maybe if it's two dudes, then I can see it.
Why would you see it if it's two dudes?
Because men are, like, you know, just not as careful.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But
so if you've got, like, two super horny dudes that find each other attractive, there could be some bumping logs in the bathroom shortly after.
Bumping logs? Sword fight!
Sure.
Yeah, I can tell you one thing, that if a woman immediately wants to jump your bones after seeing you for, like, 2 seconds, either she just had a breakup and she needs some angry sex, it's probably mascara if you're flicking something off my face. She either just broke up, she needs angry sex, or she just found out she's pregnant from a deadbeat and she's trying to find someone who will pay child support.
I had a friend out in Pittsburgh named Brian who was gay, and he was always trying to find a steady boyfriend, but he couldn't because all of the men were horny pigs and none of them wanted to commit.
I think Dustin had that same problem for a while.
Yeah, so like they would want to bang like right away. And, you know, well, he did too, so they would, but then, like, that was it.
Well, you know what? I guess I shouldn't say that, because that yoga instructor that hooked me up with someone, I mean, that was just, you know, she introduced us, he came over, and then we had sex.
Okay.
So I take all that back.
Okay.
Sometimes you just want to bump uglies.
Sure.
I mean, there was some vetting process there, but, I mean, not in person.
Yeah, so this guy basically got his pink noodle wiggled, and he's all happy about it. He doesn't come back. He goes into his wife's room, and he does this by basically going out this room, turning around,
and going back in.
Going back in, but turning the light on first.
Yep.
So that's why he always turns the light on. And he tells, we transition back to him with the newlywed wife, and he tells her, that wasn't the last time I saw her. I saw her many times after, and we do get to see some of these occurrences. He says when they moved into a new house in blah, 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 you know, he's going into the basement, and he sees her and down in there. So it's like any door. It's not just this specific door. It's any door she could be behind.
Yeah, any door that's dark.
Right.
It's dark in there.
And she has given birth to a child. He is freaked out by this child. He says it's hideous. We didn't get to see what the kid looks like. We just saw that she did have a big tummy. So he did impregnate her.
Yeah. He refers to the child as half human, half nightmare.
Right. And she says, well, you have to get your son back. You need to go to her because you're the one that she wants, not my husband. It's you. And he's
she calls him disgusting. It's very satisfying because he is disgusting.
Right. And he's like, look, I am not going back there. I would die for my son and I love my son, but there are things worse than death. So
and what
manning up and paying child support is worse than death.
Yeah, basically his response is, listen, I didn't do anything that bad. It's not like I killed someone.
Right,
so
yeah.
Why should I go back there?
Yeah, my sister, my one sister, she had quite a wild life, and she had a child with a dude that didn't want to take care of the kid you know, whatever, but dude is not paying child support and tries to, like, snail it, like, work at a snail's pace and skunk his way out of stuff by stinking up a storm in court, and it's just a fucking mess. Like, just pay the fucking child support. Like, you don't want to see the kid, okay, don't make things worse by constantly dragging the mother to court and not paying your fucking child support. Like,
yeah,
just fucking do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you put a baby inside someone,
you got a responsibility.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of dudes
weasel. When out you of it. Play, you have to pay.
Yeah, just slap a rubber on it, for fuck's sake. Like, if you don't want a baby, just use a fucking condom.
Yeah, I mean,
Jesus, it's not that hard.
I don't know. I think that if you don't want to pay child support, then, like, take out a big life insurance thing and jump off a fucking cliff. Like, you're an asshole. So, yeah, moving on. Basically, dude says he's not doing it. Things worse than death. He didn't do something so bad. So he's going back to his room. He does. She is concocting a plan here. She basically goes out into the hallway and she says, "Hey, are you out here? Can you hear me? I want to make a deal with you."
Well, she has to unscrew all the light bulbs first.
Yeah, she unscrews all the light bulbs in the hallway first, and then she closes the door and opens it and says what I'm saying. Basically, she's making a bargain with this woman, and she says, "If you let my husband go, then I will give you the one that you want." And the woman's voice responds saying, "Promise." And she's like, "Fuck yeah, I promise."
Guy's disgusting. You'll have your pig.
Yeah. Basically. And yeah, so then the woman's like, "All right, well, then let's make this happen." And she gives her husband back. And I feel like at this point, this is the most reasonable monster I have ever seen. Yes. Like, come on. She is not saying, "All right, well, this is what's going to happen. You're going to give me him, and then I'll give you your husband." No, she's just like, "All right, well, you made a deal, so I'm going to trust you, and you better fucking do it, or else, you know." Well, she doesn't say, you know, "you better or else." Right. It's just like she's trusting her, so it's very interesting. Basically, we have her tell her husband that look, you had a bad dream. Whatever you saw wasn't real. It's okay. You have a fever and you've been coming in and out of this nightmare. So just do me a favor. I'm going to go and get some water for you. Sit in bed and you're going to hear some weird stuff. Ignore it. It's just part of your fever. So close your eyes. Right. And
no matter don't leave this room.
Yeah, don't leave the room. And he says, "Okay, all right." And she goes out into the hallway and just starts screaming bloody murder and calling for the
Benjamin, help me!
Her husband's father, yeah. And she's like screaming, "Help, help, ooh, ee, ah." So it's ridiculous. He should know this is a fucking trap, but he doesn't. He comes out. And, of course, as soon as he comes out, because he's going into a dark hallway, he's there.
Hello, lady.
He's with the lady, and the lady's like, "Benjamin, you've come back to me just as you promised. I love you so much." She's, like, the most loving and understanding and forgiving monster of all time. Because she doesn't give him shit. She just hugs him, and he starts screaming as his son, that looks like a giant fucking ogre with a lumpy head, kind of shambles over to him going, "Duh, duh, oh, I love you, duh, duh." And he talks just like that. And he hugs him. And the two of them are hugging Benjamin. And Benjamin's screaming his head off, "Help me, help me." And all they're doing is just loving him. They just wanted a fucking family. Like, yeah, come on,
like,
dude.
Yeah, like, if you didn't think she was all that in a bag of potato chips, you probably shouldn't have fucked her.
Right. And he had so much time outside of this, of his little nightmare zone to enjoy life. And I feel like he did to a degree, right? So now he's with a woman essentially lives outside of space and time. So he's going to live forever. I think he's pretty lucky. He's with a sexy woman.
Well, granted, half sexy woman, and it looks like she was aging very rapidly.
No, half of her body was becoming kind of disfigured, and it was due to the fact that she was being dishonored by him.
Why was her son so disfigured then?
I guess it's because of his dishonor. But that's essentially what was going on. Like, okay. At first, she was completely gorgeous.
I'll buy that.
And then the more he dishonored her, half of her body started becoming kind of ugly. But, yeah, I mean, you know, granted, you're going to get to bang a hot-looking chick that has a weird thing going on with half of her face, which I'm fine with. But you're going to... What I'm not fine with, what I find very weird, is this... This room, remember, it's just got this bed and that's
it's
it.
Just one room.
So,
well, unless
the ogre child, who is like 9 feet tall and wearing nothing, is going to be sitting down somewhere watching them fuck. Because know they're going to fuck at some point.
I guess she could have added on. He might have his own room.
And he's just going to be going, duh, duh, yeah.
Go, da-da.
Like, oh, God.
I don't know. I'm going to assume that she probably built on to her hellscape.
Maybe. I don't know. But we transition from that to find out that the newlywed couple is together. She's very happy with her husband because he listened to her and stayed in the room. When she mentions this to him, he says, "Why wouldn't I listen to you? You're my wife and I love you. I trust you." So, yeah. That's where we're ending it. I think that was a pretty decent one. I found it creepy. It gave me horrible nightmares last night, so I don't know what to tell you.
I didn't find it all that creepy, but I've never, like,
I was skeeved out by it.
So, like, yeah. It just, I wouldn't, if you are on your honeymoon, like, why the hell would you fuck some strange lady? Like, that's super skeevy. He got everything, like... He didn't even get the worst that he could possibly get as punishment. Like, having to spend all eternity with this woman and her child.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no.
Yeah, I think there's things worse. It's pretty creepy,
He did not enjoy his life in Earthrealm. Because he was constantly afraid he was going to walk into a dark room.
I mean, I think that is kind of creepy, though, to be there forever with them. Like, that is, the more I think about it, it's disturbing to think about. Because you're not able to leave. All you have is them. There's nothing around to entertain you. And they're best socialites.
All
so.
They had were each other, too, and you abandoned them.
Yeah. I feel like I would go nuts in there.
Probably shouldn't have put his penis inside her.
Probably.
Yeah.
I liked it. I'm going to give the monster a 3. I think the lumpy-headed ogre thing and the half-weird woman looked okay. It wasn't great. But the idea of the monster kind of existing out of space and time and... You know, luring men in to keep her company. I like it. It's creepy.
Yeah, it sounds like she lured quite a few men in that never returned.
Right.
So then she finally got one, at least.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 2.5. It wasn't all that scary.
Right. I'm going to give the episode itself a 3. I think it's good. It's one that you could watch. I feel like it's creepy enough for you.
I would second that.
Okay. And for other media, would you change anything for this and could it work as a movie? I don't think it could work as a movie, really.
I don't think it's complicated enough to work as a movie.
Right.
They seem to have covered it well in the 20 minutes,
yeah.
So I can't imagine trying to expand it.
No. I think it works fine in the area it's in right now.
I don't know that I would actually change anything. As, like, middle of the road as I thought it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it really wasn't lacking, necessarily.
I would have liked to have seen more of the ogre child, honestly. Because we really only get to see, like,
well,
like a profile and then the back of his head.
A glimpse, but, yeah. like... I don't know that we really needed to see more of him.
I did. I like ogres, so. For other recommendation other media for you.
Shrek.
No. I don't like Shrek. That's stupid. I hate it.
In the morning, I'm getting waffles.
Okay. I hate it.
You hate Shrek.
It's stupid. It's so bad. I love Shrek. I hate it so much.
There's so many grown-up jokes in there.
I really don't like it. Like, any of it. At all.
You're weird. I love Donkey.
Yeah, I'm gonna recommend to you Equinox, which is a 1970s film. This is a very interesting one because it's, in my opinion, a precursor to the Evil Dead movies. I like to think of it that way. I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like it must have inspired Sam Raimi in some ways, because there's a lot of same notes that are being hit in it. We've definitely got a Necronomicon. We've definitely got some teenagers going out to a cabin in the middle of the woods. And we've definitely got them summoning some stuff that they really shouldn't be summoning. And we have some strange monsters in it. They're, I wonder if they are actually done by Ray Harryhausen. I'm not sure if they are, but they definitely feel like if they're not, they're highly inspired by him. There's some cool ones. We've got like a weird red devil with giant wings. We've got a huge ass ogre, of course, which is where the recommendation is coming in.
Are there ogres in it?
Yes, there's a giant blue ogre.
Blue?
Yep.
Okay.
It's fun. I like it. It's cheesy at the same time, but I feel like it's deserving of many watches.
The one in the waiting room was flesh colored.
Okay.
The ogre, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, he was flesh colored. Well, I don't know. Did you have any anything to shout out or throw at the listeners before we close this one out?
For ogres?
Oh, just for anything, really.
Oh, I'm pretty empty tonight. I think that wandering eye came down and put acid in my brain and drained it all away.
Okay.
So maybe you can have nightmares about that tonight, and then you'll wake up early and make the coffee.
I made the coffee today.
Yeah. So if I keep giving you nightmares, what I'm saying is if you keep having nightmares, does that mean that the coffee keeps getting made before I get waked up? Before I wake up?
I guess if I wake up early, then things will get done. But that's a rare occurrence.
Are you still looking for Equinox factoids?
Oh, yeah, I guess. I'm sorry. I should close this out.
about Equinox on your dime.
Thanks for joining us today. Catch us tomorrow. We'll be doing some more episodes of Monsters.
He really wants to go just read all about it.
Honey, it's family hour. There must be something on.
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show.
Shh, it's starting.